Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in this world of marketing. And in today's episode, my incredible guest, Seth Donlin, a marketing and storytelling coach who has worked with countless clients on helping them communicate their messages authentically, joins me. He is an expert in guiding businesses to leverage the power of storytelling to connect deeply with their audiences with a specific passion of sharing those stories via a podcast. You know I'm excited about that. So of course, in this episode, we go into podcast as a marketing strategy, from sharing his insights on how to use podcast guesting to build your brand authority to how to pitch yourself as a potential guest. But we don't stop there. Seth shares many tips on the value of podcasts for personal brand and business. If you've been thinking, should I be on or start a podcast? This is the episode for you. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Seth, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am really excited to have you on here today because we get to dive into podcasting. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Katya. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely. So let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. I'd love to know what you currently do.
I am a marketing, small business marketing and storytelling coach. And I help people be able to, you know, get on a podcast or really any stage in general, but these days, increasingly, my clients are looking to be on podcasts. And so that's something that I'm really focusing on with my coaching. So helping them come to a podcast and really be the best kind of guest that they can possibly be to help get their message across, help provide value to the audience, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that. What is it that you love about what you do? But be prepared. With the good comes the bad. So I want to know what you don't like about it. So let's start with the good. What do you love about what you do?
Well, I love storytelling. I've been, you know, I mean, we all have been doing storytelling since we were little kids, yeah. Right? Making up stories, getting our bedtime stories. And I love working with my clients, helping them to realize, even though they may be really nervous about being in front of a bunch of people, even though they may look at themselves as not particularly creative person, not a really engaging storyteller, helping them to realize that they have some really wonderful stories that they can tell them authentically and easily. And, you know, when that happens, it's a wonderful transformation. I really like, you know, seeing that in my clients.
I would imagine that that would be a very exciting thing to see. It's almost to me like this equivalent of like, I want you to see you the way that I see you, kind of that you're giving back. Are there some tips for that you kind of give people to get them to this kind of part or the stage where you're like, you are a storyteller. Let me show you. All you have to do is X, Y, Z. Like, is there a question that you ask them, or how do you get people to see that they are storytellers?
Well, you know, one is we have to get people thinking beyond the idea of like a Hollywood movie story, or, you know, it's good like point. Harry Potter and people are lining up at midnight to get the next book because it's this amazing story, right? And so many of the stories that are really effective business storytelling and that really help you connect with your audience and give them that nugget of wisdom that they need to take this next step, whether that step is to believe in themselves, whether that step is to invest in themselves by like hiring you as a coach or hiring you to design their website or buying your new wonderful face care product, you know, whatever it is that, you know, you're trying to work with your clients with, clients, customers, it's usually not the story of you winning the Olympics or something yeah. that is going to help you along with that. And when people begin to realize that, it gets a lot easier. Now, there's some work in finding those little everyday stories. That takes some practice to get to the point where you're recognizing them in your daily life and being able to say, ah, that's a good one. Let me see if I can use that. Let me work on that. But that's the first step in realizing that everybody has these everyday stories. It's not all about, you know, the one big story. Oh my God, I can't believe you did that. No, that doesn't have to be the story. It can be, hey, I was waiting to pick up my kid and I realized, or I saw a couple talking on the sidewalk and it made me think, or, you know, these are the type of stories that everybody has in their daily lives and therefore are very relatable to the average audience member.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was scrolling, which shouldn't be a surprise to any of my listeners, but I was scrolling and I came across a TikTok influencer who is really big on just kind of communications and storytelling. And one of the pieces of advice that he gave, which like is literally now this marble that just rolls around in my head at all times, is if you want to be a storyteller, collect your stories in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Collect your stories and retell them. And continue to retell them and continue to retell them, because it gets better the more practice you have in doing that, because you get to know like the questions that people are asking you and refining your story. So I loved that advice, and I love that you've already made that connection of like, it doesn't have to be Hollywood, right? Like when it's that ginormous in our head, it's like arrested development. We don't want to move forward.
No, I mean, I have my clients literally keep a journal. I mean, they can do it on paper. They can do it in some electronic fashion. That's not what's important. But literally keep a journal where they write down the seeds of stories that have happened to them during mm-hmm. the day. And so that means when you go out to grab coffee at work and you come back and you say to your coworker, you're not going to believe what I just saw, what I just heard, whatever. Boom. That's a story. You write that down in your, you don't have to write the whole thing out. Like you know, five pages later, you're still writing your story.
You're just
writing like bullet points, you know, title of the story or something. And a couple of key things to make you remember what was going on, why you thought it was an interesting story. When you get home and you say to your child or your spouse or your roommate or whatever, oh my goodness, listen to this funny thing that I just heard or whatever. That's a story, and you write that down, right? Mm-hmm. You have that moment where you're driving home from whatever your errand you were running and you're thinking to yourself, oh my goodness, I can't believe that XYZ. That's a story, and you write it down, right? And so the reality is you're going to get a journal full of these things, and probably 80, 90% of them are not going to be of any use to you in your business.
Yeah. But
fine, because the 10% are there at hand, easily accessible, and you're not scrambling when it's time. When you need a story, you're not saying, oh my goodness, I have no stories. I don't know what I'm talking about. Right. They're right there at fingertips. And then, like you said, you can start polishing them. You can play with them. You can practice them, and so on.
I love that. So awakening the storyteller in us is one of the things that you love about what you do. But like I said, with the good comes the bad. So I'm curious, if I had my magic wand and I could pluck anything out of your everyday work, what would that be?
Yeah, I hate to say it. It embarrasses me to say it, but I really wish that I didn't have to do sales. And I say that. I mean, like, you can employ storytelling in sales, right? I should be good at this, and I'd like to say I am pretty good at it, but I don't really love it. And I say this despite the belief that selling is serving, and I really believe. Yeah. One of my coaches taught me this, Colin Boyd, that, you know, in order to, you know, selling is serving, because the first step in serving your clients is actually getting them to invest in themselves, buy your service, buy your product, whatever. Until they've actually purchased it, you can't be helping them. I mean, maybe if you want to run a nonprofit and give it away, but then how often, you know, how many people can you really serve that way? You've got to put food on your table. So then you're going to have to have another full-time job and you're only helping people part-time, when you can sell, you can serve them. And it's the, you know, similar to doing what we're doing right now, right? I'm coming on your show, which to some people feels very uncomfortable the way that selling does for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're not getting out in front of people and letting them know about the amazing thing that you have to offer, whether it's something you do, something you sell, if you're not letting them know about that, then they can't buy it, right? You can't sell it, and then you can't serve. So it's these little uncomfortable things that we do in our business that, you know, are hugely important, even though we may not love them. For me, it's sales. For other people, it's, you know, public speaking, getting in front of the camera.
Isn't that the truth? And I don't think that you should be embarrassed. I mean, feel the way you want to feel, but I don't think you should be embarrassed. I also don't like selling in any business. And I think, like, oftentimes I have this discussion of, well, marketing and sales are just so intertwined, and they definitely are. But for me, like, the distinct difference is, you know, for marketing, my joy comes from the twinkle in the eye, not the pressure of the bottom line. And that's where I think, like, sales lives, because you're right, we do have to be able to sell. But when you come at it from like this place that I do from a marketing perspective, where I'm like, I do like that joy of the storytelling. And when you get something, I call it like the twinkle in the eye versus this pressure of like, oh no, now this conversation, I have to get this for my bottom line. So it's such a nuanced difference, but it definitely, like, the way that you approach it, that's definitely where you feel it the most.
Yeah. And I think I get too caught up, even though I know I shouldn't, I get too caught up in the numbers, right? When I'm marketing, I mean, I have metrics that I want to hit in my marketing, obviously, to be successful. Yeah. As long as they, on average, are trending in the right direction, when I'm looking at it weekly, monthly, whatever, then I'm feeling good. With sales, at least the way I do it in my business, it tends to be, you know, I'm not selling every day. I'm having a launch where I'm hoping to hit a certain target, or I'm speaking one-on-one with somebody and I'm hoping to close that one sale. And so it allows me to fall into that, like, really micro-focused rather than macro-focused. And then if I've won, you know, if I close the sale, if I've hit my target numbers, then I'm really excited. And if I'm a little bit off, then I'm down on myself. And I don't, and it's going to be a while until I get the next opportunity to kind of redeem myself. And that's why I think it feels uncomfortable to me, because I get too caught up in my, you know what I mean? Like,
yes, it's the pressure.
Or you know. Yeah.
You're just a high achiever, Seth, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, in your line of work, I would imagine that you have to really stay up to date with the trends. And I think, like, in anybody's line of work, when it comes to, like, a marketing perspective, you have to stay up to date with the trends. So I'm curious, how are you staying up to date with the trends? Are you obsessed with all podcasts so that you can, like, soak it all in and learn from it? Or are there newsletters? Are there people you watch, books you read? How are you staying up
to date? Yeah, you watch those Hollywood movies with, like, you know, the evil villain and has a wall full of, like, 100 different TV screens. That's me with podcasts. I'm just, like, taking them all in all at once.
What are they doing well? What are they not?
I do listen to a lot of podcasts, but I mean, you know, I probably don't listen to as many as some people, and there's almost an infinite amount of them out there right now, right?
Yeah.
But I do listen to targeted. I mean, I listen to podcasts. I read. I talk to other industry experts, other coaches, and just, you know, what's the latest technology? What are the trends we're seeing in terms of, you know, I'd say right now, like, you know, trend that we're seeing in a lot of podcasts are people are going back to a less polished podcast, right? People started out, it was real rough, and then there was a sign of professionalism to have a really polished upfront package and lengthy intros and flashy, you know, sound and music and stuff like that. And then as the market began to get more saturated and there was more competition, people started to realize, wait a minute, those long kind of fancier intros, are keeping me from getting to the meat of my, of what I want to talk about. And, you know, podcast lists lose about a third of their listenership in the first 5 minutes of the show, of an episode, right? So the quicker you can get to where you're actually talking about the thing that people have come to listen to, the better you are. So I'm seeing now, and I'm hearing people talk about a lot more, doing away with a lot of the fancier upfront stuff and kind of just getting quickly right into the main discussion. And it for some people it works, for other people it doesn't, but I think in general that's a positive trend that I'm seeing, and so you just, you know, keep my ear to the ground.
Exactly. You kind of have to be everywhere, right? And pick up your tidbits here and there for sure. Well, I'm ready to dive into like what we came here to talk about, like the meat and potatoes of it all, which is really podcasting. And it's going from, you know, podcasting is a guest to a brand. And I kind of want to start to kick things off when we're having this conversation about kind of some common misconceptions about podcasting as a marketing strategy, whether you're a host or a guest. I don't know if it's different misconceptions, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on just common misconceptions of leveraging podcasts as a marketing strategy.
Well, I think one misconception that a lot of people have is that it's going to be podcasting is a long game, right? And it's like a snowball rolling down a hill. It takes on speed and it takes on mass, and it really starts, it's an engine that you start up and it starts producing for you long, you know, further down, you know, the time stream. Unlike maybe, you know, if you get yourself booked as a keynote speaker or something and you get up in front of people and you're able to, whether you're allowed to actually pitch at the end or whether you're doing a soft sell where you're just kind of seeding the conversation with the idea that you serve a certain group of people in a certain way so that those people in the audience can kind of self-select and catch you out in the, you know, in the hallway afterwards and say, oh, I want to find out more. Let me, you know, let's talk. You're probably going to see results from that pretty quickly, right? You're going to be able to walk away with that, with some, you know, warm leads right away. And hopefully if your call to action at the end of a podcast is good, you're hopefully going to walk away with some warm leads from that. But you're going to see that grows over time because there's going to be a certain amount of the audience that listens when the show launches. There's going to be a certain amount that listens a couple weeks later. There's going to be some people that find that show via, you know, depending on where the host is putting it, they're going to find a pin on Pinterest about it, or they're going to find it on YouTube, or, and it's going to be 6 months and 9 months later. And those leads are still going to keep coming in, and they, you know, show after show that you do, they stack upon each other. And then that ball really gets rolling. But if you're saying to yourself, oh, I'm going to go get myself booked on one or two big shows, and then it's going to all just come like flooding in at me, it's probably not going to happen that way. It's going to be, you're going to have a gradual build.
You know, the biggest takeaway from what you said is that it's the long game. Because I also think that is a misconception, that you're going to see something right away. And while, yes, to your point, there are instances where you can see something from like a brand perspective, I want to get the leads. I think that it's a version of SEO, right? Like SEO is the long game. It's more about consistency and the quality of the content that you're putting out. Because you're absolutely right. Like you can introduce your podcast to someone based on a guest that, or a particular topic, and then that's where it's introduced. It's never like from the beginning. And I think that there's always this continuous cycle of promotion with podcasts that is just so lovely. You know, I start that process myself where I'm like, okay, you know, before I'm ramping up for season three, I'm going to start posting about season two all over again and getting like the guests to also post on that as well too, because it is continuous. You want to continue to have a ton of downloads. Now, from a brand perspective, what are the advantages of hosting it versus being a guest, or do they work kind of together?
It's a good question. I mean, I am launching a podcast in just next month myself. I've been years without because my focus is for myself has always been on guesting. Now, yeah. It's one of the things that I work with my clients on. I'm a big advocate of it, obviously. And that's not to say that hosting isn't great as well. Like I said, I'm starting one. But from a guesting standpoint, there's something really nice that happens when you're a guest on someone's podcast. They've yeah. done all the work to build an audience. Beyond that, they've done all the work to make themselves to have that know, like, and trust factor for themselves, right? They have, authority within their own audience. Now, when you show up as a guest on their show, like I'm showing up on yours today, you instantly have authority with that audience immediately upon meeting them, because why would their trusted host have brought you on the show if you weren't somebody to be trusted and you didn't have yeah. authority in the field that you're speaking in? So you immediately get that brand authority without having to do all of that laborious work of yeah. putting together a podcast. Now, again, being the host has its own set of pluses and minuses. But now, next week, I get myself booked on probably three podcasts a month, just month in, month out. And so sometimes I'm coming back and repeating on somebody's show. But, three times a month, I'm getting in front of a new audience mm-hmm. and getting that authority placed upon me by the host, which is something that, it would be really hard for me to replicate those numbers in my own show, unless yeah. I had like a top 1% show or something like that, right? And so there's some real benefits to that. Of course, the downside is that there's a lot of hustling and getting yourself booked on shows. Yeah. You are at the mercy of the host. We're having a great conversation. You're asking great questions. You can get in a show where it doesn't go so well, right? And you're kind yes. of struggling to get your message out, and it feels like you're at loggerheads sometimes with the host. So, there's downsides to guesting too, and lots of pluses to being the host and getting to set the agenda and week in, week out, getting, those reps with your audience and yeah. building that trust and that authority over time. The ability to bring on a guest to help, lend yourself credibility. But also to if you do solo shows, to do a solo show where the focus is just on you, you are the expert, right? You're not like a journalist interviewing an expert, right? So yeah. pluses and minuses. I think for starting out, it's a lot easier to start out as a guest. But again, you're not controlling your own destiny in that sense.
That's so true. I couldn't agree with you more. And so many, I have like 12,000 questions, follow-up questions that I want to be able to ask you. But for one, like the thing that I want to call out that you said is building that brand authority. And it's that social proof of being a guest on someone's podcast so that you have that built-in authority. You're speaking to their community and hopefully it's the right one, which leads me to the segue of how do I find the right one, right? Not just for myself, but sure. I think like that's a common question for brands who have it in their head where they're like, let's just do the podcast, right? Or let's do podcasts. Get me a guest spot on any podcast. Like, how do I even know which podcast to go after if I, for example, am working for a brand that wants to get their senior leadership to put out some kind of thought leadership content? How do I even know which are the right podcasts.
Yeah, well, that takes, like anything, it takes some research. And there's a couple ways you can do it. One, you can do it yourself, or, you know, if you have a team, you have your team do it for you. Another is you buy it via hiring a podcast. There are podcast booking agencies. And just like, you know, if you were a, excuse me, I have to get my cat off of my...
I love that your cat wanted to make a guest appearance and obviously has an opinion about exactly how to show up at a podcast.
Yeah, and that's why I kept my 110-pound dog that's normally in the office with me out for recordings, because he would be
trying to make... Like, I've got stuff to say.
But getting back to the question, there are a lot of wonderful agencies. Actual agencies. There are people that do it solo or with a small team, right? That maybe are also coaching people like myself. But you can hire people to book you on podcasts, just like you can, you know, if you can get a publicist for your band or your books or whatever, right? And they will find spots for you. Depending on what your offer is, depending on how you look at it, it's not inexpensive, but, you know, the best agencies charge anywhere from between like $500 and $600 per booking, basically. Some of them have a lot. Many of them do a guarantee, you know, we will guarantee to book you on 10 shows or 30 shows or whatever, right? Some will give you a monthly, and then, you know, they're... Hopefully it comes out in a wash that you get a fair amount of bookings, but I like the kind of guaranteed I will book you on a show's model. Usually that works out to be about $500 or $600 a show, which seems like a lot, but it depends on what you're doing. If you're selling a high ticket item, then, you know, you can do my group coaching program. They're generally offered for $2,500. So if I'm spending $500 to get myself booked on a show, and I can sell one group coaching member every five shows, yeah, I break even. Now, you know, hopefully I'm going to have more than one per five shows, right? So for me, the math makes sense. I also book myself on shows to even add into that. But if you're not paying for it, I generally recommend people do, because let the experts handle that. Okay. Yeah. If you can afford it, if that's within your budget, let the experts handle it. If it's not within your budget, you're just starting out, you're just wanting to kind of like dip your toe in the water. There's lots of, I mean, Facebook has communities where you can, you know, called Find a Guest, Be a Guest communities. You can go on there, you post hashtag find a guest, hashtag be a guest, not all the hosts, but lots of podcast hosts, particularly ones that are just starting out, which are great shows for guests that are just starting out to be on. I recommend all my clients, if they haven't already been doing a number, you know, some of my clients come to me because they've done some shows and they realize this is working for me, I like it. If I'm going to keep doing it, I want to get better at it. I want to find somebody to help me get better at it. Okay. Other people come to me because they say, I want to start at this and I want to start out with help that, so I hit the ground running and I'm doing as well from, you know, day one as I possibly can. For those people, I generally recommend that they book themselves on shows with almost no audience. Most people want to go, they want to find the best fit with the largest audience, which makes sense. Yeah. But it's like a professional athlete, right? You know, baseball has a zillion, right? There's the major leagues, and then there's AAA and AA and single A and high A and whatever. I don't know if you know baseball, but there's like a million minor leagues.
Yeah.
And athlete doesn't get drafted and go right into the majors. They work their way up through all these minors. So I tell my clients, or, you know, mentees, anybody that I'm even just giving a piece of advice to, don't worry about the size of the show, how many episodes it's had, whether it's going to stand the test of time. ultimately for your first couple of shows, you don't care. Hopefully the podcast doesn't fail and it's still around and people are still finding it like years down the road. But if that host puts out five shows and then quits, you don't care. I say you don't care because that show and your second show and your third show that you're guesting on are really just you getting all your jitters out and making a fool of yourself on a, not you're going to make a fool of yourself, but like you're going to worry that you're going to make a fool out of yourself. So do it in front of a really small audience. Probably you won't make a fool out of yourself, but if you're nervous about it, don't do it on a big stage, do it on a really small stage.
I love that advice. And I do, you know, I have obviously follow-up questions to that too. But one of the things that I really love about that is that it is really about getting in your reps. And, you know, I'm piggybacking off of your baseball analogy, right? Like it is getting in the reps of it so that you can go up and work your way through the different leagues. Sure. And, you know, eventually hit one out of the park that has like that big audience, which does lead me to this, my next question, which is if I'm, let's say I'm doing this myself, I have this executive leader that I know that I want to get into podcasts, what kind of things am I looking for? You mentioned audience size, but you also mentioned how long it's been, how many episodes, like
sure.
How much do those things play into, is this the right one or is this not the right one? Are there markers that I should be looking for to get me at least in that right direction?
Sure. I mean, I think you want to see that probably the, you know, depending on how the, it's hard to give a hard and fast rule. First of all, podcasting is not like, you know, newspapers or radio or television where there are longstanding organizations that audit them and say, yes, the circulation of this paper is X. And you know, that television show got so many viewers, right? Podcasts don't do that. There's no way externally that I can see what are the numbers for your show. You can say my numbers are Y, and you know, I'll believe you. Right? Why not? But there's you can't say like I'm going to search for shows that get 3,000 monthly downloads. Boom, right? Yeah. You can't do that. So you have to kind of infer via some other things. And one way that you can do that is just, you know, how long have they been doing it? How many episodes do they have out? What's their consistency like? Are they? Not everybody puts up a show weekly, then that doesn't have to be the metric, right? Some people are putting up bi-weekly or they're putting up monthly or whatever. But if that's what they're saying they're doing, how are they doing? Are they pretty much putting up a show every week? Maybe they miss one every once in a while. Okay, good. That's a good sign. Have they put up, you know, if they're going weekly, have they put up 30 shows or something, you know what I mean? They're like halfway through a year and they're still going strong. And you're like, okay, well, this is looking pretty good. Now, if you see that they put out 3 weeks in a row and then 4 weeks later, there's two shows and then 3 weeks later, there's a show and then a 2 week gap. And like, okay, if you see that there's a long body of work and they've been doing this for years and they're just spotty, well, you know, that's a judgment call for you of whether you want to be on that show or not. It looks like they're probably not, you know, they're not going to quit. They've been at it for a while. But what is that listenership like when you're like, oh, it's a weekly show, but then there's all these gaps and like, as you know, as a podcast listener, when a show goes on a bit of a hiatus, sometimes you lose some audience because they get listening to other things and then they don't come back or they, you know, or 9 months later, they're like, oh yeah, I got to get back to listening to that show, but they've lost 9 months. Are they going to go back and binge those 9 months of episodes? If you're in that 9 month gap, maybe you get missed, maybe you don't. So, you know, it's a judgment call. You have to look at these things and figure out, you know, if you think it's a right fit for you. And again, unfortunately, there's no like hard or fast metrics. You know, if some big name, if you've got this senior management person in the industry, you know, they're in, you know, they're a sand hog, they drill tunnels in heavy construction, and there's some giant in the heavy construction industry that's starting a podcast and they're three episodes in, I'd say jump on it. I mean, maybe that podcast doesn't survive, but take a winger, because if it does survive, well, you're in early on with a titan, right? So again, you know, you've got to kind of figure, you know, unfortunately, it's like, you've got to figure it out a little bit for yourself. What's your risk reward? In the end, you know, you spend a little bit of prep time. You spend some recording time. You spend some time afterwards helping promote the show. I mean, you're probably only into it for a few hours or something like that. So it's not like a huge investment if it doesn't pan out.
It's not that heavy of a lift at the end of the day. And also, even if the podcast does flame out, podcasts don't just like die off. Like, they don't just delete them. They're just not found. So you always have, in my opinion, you always have that body of content, right? Like, if I'm going on to a show and I have a message, my message is consistent, whether the podcast isn't consistent. So I always look at it as a huge value add from a content perspective. This, you know, for me personally, when I'm a guest on a show, I know that I'm like, well, this is all building up my brand. And I still have those links on my, you know, the podcast links on my LinkedIn. Like, these are all still accurate representations of who I am. And I think that it works both ways for a brand. It works both ways for a brand. You still have your thought leadership out, which then leads me to the, how am I going to pitch myself, right? Like, as a brand, as an individual, how do I pitch myself? What do I get ready so that I am satisfied with that content if it does fizzle out? I've seen a lot of different approaches, but I'm really interested to hear your approach in outreach to be a guest.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I'm going to answer that question. I just want to wrap back to what we were saying before, in that there is a lot of, right, there's a lot of benefit that comes from doing a podcast that's post, that isn't somebody listening to the podcast. That's something that people have to realize. I mean, you know, there are going to be links, backlinks to your website from the show notes. There are going to be social media, provided this is one of your judging criteria, provided the host is doing it right, there are going to be all these things. The host is going to package up a little video content that you can put on Reels, that you can put on, you know, YouTube Shorts, what have you. Some hosts will give you the, you know, the final file, not necessarily the raw file. Some might give you the raw file, but you can take and make little clips. Oh, that exchange we had was gold. The host didn't package it up. I'll package it up and I'll put that on my website, because it really is a perfect way of, in 30 seconds, encapsulating what I do, what I'm all about, or whatever. So there's all kinds of like material that you can repurpose into social media, repurpose onto your website. There's the SEO backlinks. There's all kinds of things that you can have after the fact, like you're saying. And that's something not to forget about when you're considering what shows you're going to be on, or whether you want to invest in podcast guesting in the first place. Don't forget all of the other benefits that come along with it. Now, to answer your question about how do you pitch yourself and how do you prepare, it's not that, it doesn't have to be that difficult of a process. You know, put together a one sheet for yourself that has headshot on it, brief, like one paragraph bio about who you are professionally. I mean, presumably you're doing it professionally. If you're, you know, pitching your life story, it's slightly different, right? But bio about who you are professionally, and then topics that you would be perfect to speak to. All right. I speak about, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 5 questions. It's, you know, kind of a redundancy, but it helps. Then not just here's the things that I speak about, But here's specific questions that I would answer, which are going to relate to those five things likely, right? But just some podcast hosts are going to see the question and be like, oh yeah, okay, I get it now, more easily than from your five topics, right? Like I said, and then you're going to have your like social media links on there, so they can go and, you know, check you out to make sure that you are who you say you are and see, oh yes, this person is active on LinkedIn. This person is active on Instagram or wherever it is that you're active.
Yeah.
The host is going to want to know that you're going to help. In most cases, the host is going to want to know that you're going to help promote their show. And so they want to make sure that you don't have 10 connections on LinkedIn or, you know, five followers on Facebook or something like that, and you're not going to be able to bring any additional audience to the party. So, you know, once you have a pitch sheet like that, a one-page pitch sheet, I mean, you're pretty ready to go. That's mostly what hosts will want. They'll also want materials after the fact. They're going to want a high-res headshot from you. They may want you to fill out a form where you're going to list all of your, you know, your email and your podcast, you know, your social media, you know, handles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But for pitching yourself, that pitch sheet is probably all you really need. Now, if you want to do it a little better, if you want to be if you want to take it to the next step, then having a page on your website that is dedicated, kind of like having, like if you were a keynote speaker, you have a speaker page. We have a page that really kind of talks about your podcasting. Once you've had some podcasts, you can link to those podcasts on there. You can have a little audio clip or video clip if the podcasts are being recorded like this one is. You have these things on your podcast page that you can drive people to and for SEO purposes and so on and so forth. And then the third thing that I would say is once you get some shows under your belt, and this goes back to the earlier discussion about like, just get on some shows, make sure that's a show in your industry. But if they have two listeners, that's fine because you just want the audio and the video clips so that you can put together a sizzle reel. And then you can send a link to hosts of your sizzle reel to give them a sense of, okay, this is who I am. This is what I'm like. This is what it's like to interview me. This is how I talk and relate to the audience. And that will also, you know, it's another nice, like, oh wow, this person has a sizzle reel. They're serious.
Yes. They really know what they're doing. I think that those are two really easy ways for people to just kind of gather all the things that they need in order to be able to pitch themselves. A one sheet, you know, or a pitch sheet, as you called it, and then even having that exact same thing on your website if you do have a website, right? A URL is always so much easier to link than or to send out versus like attaching a PDF sometimes. So I think that's fantastic advice. I have one more question before I get to my final question. Because I'm really curious as your thoughts on this, because one of the things that you talked about including in that kind of pitch sheet is a list of topics and kind of questions that you're going over. Is there, or should I be worried as a brand about talking about the same thing on like a podcast every month? Am I shooting myself in the foot if I'm always talking about kind of the same thing, or does that even matter?
No, that's not a thing. I mean, obviously it's a thing that people do talk about the same thing over and over again, but you absolutely should. I mean, if you are pitching yourself as an expert in, excuse me, if you're pitching yourself as an expert in a certain space, then that repetition, if somebody happens to bump into you twice within the same month, well, great, you're getting yourself saturated. That's a good thing. But they're going to hear you talk about the same things you talked about, and it's going to reinforce the fact that that is what you are all about and that's what you're an expert in. Now, if they bump into you 6 months later, they're not going to remember what you talked about the first time. So it's not really going to matter.
We're not as important as we think we are, right?
Exactly. So, you know, the likelihood of the 6 months later or the 9 months later happening is far greater, even though that's probably not as great as you think it is. It's far greater than somebody hears you like a week or two later. But again, even if they hear you a week or two later, that's just reinforcing what you're all about. And the reality is that you have a message that you're trying to get out to a audience if you're doing it right. You don't have six messages that you're trying to target to 10 different audiences.
Yeah.
So keep it simple, you know, talk about the same things to the same audiences, you know, same types of audiences, right? Different shows, different audiences, but you're speaking to mompreneurs or you're speaking to, right? Consumer packaged good buyers or, so, you know, whatever your audience is that you're speaking about, speak about the thing that you're an expert on and that they need to hear about. And don't worry about whether you've said it before.
Good. That's what I was hoping you would say. I always like it when other people say it too.
I'll just say from my experience, I have heard coaches be on one person's show.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier I mentioned I have a coach named Colin Boyd. He has a podcast. Listen to his podcast. There's a coach on Colin Boyd's podcast. Then a couple months later, I'm listening to Amy Porterfield's podcast. The same coach is on Amy Porterfield's podcast, of course, talking about the same thing because it's what she does, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, that's right. I loved what they were talking about on Colin's show. Mm-hmm. I should probably reach out to her and take the next step, right? So that repetition is good. Hearing the same thing over and over again is actually good for your audience. Is actually going to probably actually feel good about that, not feel icky because you're saying the same thing.
I love that. And I love that example that you gave as well, too. I think it really helps put a bow on that final statement. Now, I do have a final question because I could be talking to you for hours about podcasting in general. But my final question to you is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
That's a good question. I'm going to take us on a little bit of a journey. When I was a little kid in grade school, and you know, I'm dating myself, but I was born in the early 70s. So when I was in grade school, it's like late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Crockers were like the biggest thing. There were so many movies, Smokey and the Bandit, Any Which Way But Loose, Convoy, all these trucker movies. And my best friend and I, anytime that we could, we would hop on our bikes and we would drive down to the local rural route where a lot of semis would come by. And we'd pack a lunch and we would sit out there pumping our fists as the truckers would go by to get them to blow the air for us. Okay. We loved it. We were in heaven. We would argue about Peterbilt versus Mack. I loved Mack. Keith loved Peterbilt. And, you know, just have a great time as these truckers would blow their horns because it's like, oh, 2 9-year-old kids, 10-year-old kids, whatever. Of course, they're going to blow their horns for us. Well, if you think about it, on that road, that rural route, there were a fair amount of trucks, but there was way more pickup trucks and cars and station wagons and vans, right? And we're out there going like this.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with the cars and the pickup trucks? Nothing. That message that we were sending to the truckers was totally lost on the pickup trucks and stuff. But we didn't care. We were there for the tractor trucks, the big rigs, right? And so one thing that I think about in my marketing, in my messaging, is sometimes I'll get feedback to some message that I put out that I think is going to really resonate, right?
Yeah.
And it does resonate with some people. And then it gets it resonates negatively with some other people, mm-hmm. right? They're like, why are you doing this? Why are you talking about that? You know, LinkedIn isn't for this or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remind myself, those people are station wagons, right? They
are not
big rigs. They do not have air horns. I do not care about them. I am here to get people to blow their air horns. And I have some people down here in the comments blowing air horns. I'm fine. If the station wagons are like shaking their head at me or wondering what I'm doing or don't get it, that's okay. Because that's not the audience that I'm after. And so to properly answer your question, I would say early on, I got too caught up in trying to be to have broader appeal. I mean, I understood marketing enough to know that I wasn't trying to appeal to everyone. I want people to like me. I want people to like my content. Yeah. I want people to be like, oh, well, that wasn't for me, but I get where you were coming from. That was great. And I wanted just all happy vibes and a growing audience. I didn't want to lose any audience members. Now I'm like, I'm speaking to truck drivers to get air horns, and I don't care about anything else. That's all I care about. And I wish I had realized that earlier in my career.
I love that advice. Some would say I'm obsessed with it because yes, leave out the station wagons of your life. Of your life and for work as well, too. And I think that that's a hard thing for people sometimes. I think one of the best pieces of advice that I ever received in my career was something similar. I had this boss who, and again, you know, when you're early on in your career, you do want to be liked, right? Like liked is a thing. And I remember so distinctly, she sat me down and she said, you know, you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and that's okay. Not everybody's going to like you. And that's okay. And it's so funny how those little like tidbits stay with you. And now I really use that for every aspect of the things that I do with email marketing. If they unsubscribe, why would I take it personal? Thank you for scrubbing my list for me. This is obviously not the email for you. And this is the only way that we can communicate that. So I love that you said that.
I don't think we talk about it enough. Good copy, good marketing, good messaging repels as much as it attracts. And it should, by design, it should be pushing people. It should be, you know, not alienating people in a negative way, but it should be pushing people away. So people are like, oh my goodness, that person is not for me. Great. You've made this. Yep. You've gotten out of my way. Now I can talk to the people that I need to talk to, right? So it's a great thing when not controversial for controversial's sake, not edgy for edgy's sake, not right. But don't worry about offending or turning somebody off like you should be. If your message isn't turning people off, then it's not turning people on. So you should. Mm-hmm. Be specifically looking to divide any audience you're speaking to into the people I want to be speaking to and the people I don't need to be speaking to. And your messaging should always be doing that, sifting and refining and constantly. Hopefully as your target gets more and more refined, hopefully you're just polishing off the edges, repelling the edges, and you're drawing in more and more. But it should always be scrubbing people off at the same time that it's attracting people in.
I think that I just really needed to hear that today of all days as well to this that last soundbite of if you're not turning people off, then you're not turning people on. Because you're right. This is also something that you can take on with everything from marketing to things in your life as well too. You're just not going to please everybody. I cannot thank you enough for coming on here and just dropping your knowledge bombs and sharing your insights with me and my audience. So thank you so much.
You are very welcome, Katya. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It was a great talk. I really enjoyed it.
I hope that you enjoyed the episode with Seth, where we really dive into podcast pitching, podcast guesting, kind of all things podcast. I've got my key takeaways for you. First key takeaway, podcast for brand growth. Let's talk about the power of podcasts. You know, Seth really opened our eyes today to how stepping into the right podcast can be a game changer for any brand. It's not just about getting your voice out there. It's about reaching new audiences, establishing your authority, and ultimately enhancing your brand's visibility. Now, imagine sharing your story, your insights, in a place where listeners are already tuned in and eager to hear what you have to offer. It's like being handed a microphone at a party full of potential customers. Just remember to choose wisely and prepare well. Make every podcast appearance count, because after you record, the recording lives on for just about ever, my friends. It's an opportunity to create evergreen content. Key takeaway number two, mastering the art of pitching. No, I am not talking about baseball. I am talking about podcast pitching. So what about when you're pitching, right? The golden nuggets on crafting pitches shared that really resonates is to remember that it's all about connecting with your audience, understanding their needs, and presenting your ideas in a way that not only captures their attention, but it holds it. So position yourself to share that you do. Tailor your message, make it compelling, and above all, make it memorable. That's so how do you even get started, right? Create a one sheet. How can you answer the top questions the audience you're wishing to connect with will want to hear the answers to? If it's thought leadership, what's your hot take on an existing topic of conversation that will be unique to the podcast host you're pitching and their audience? Then list out some questions that they can ask you that support that overarching topic, and then send it off. Now, pitching is a bit of a numbers game, so don't get discouraged if you get a no or no responses. Take the time to find the right podcast you want to pitch to. Now, Seth went over some great key things to look for in doing that part too. If you can't remember, listen back to the episode. My final and third key takeaway is everyday stories are your marketing tool. So the power of storytelling. Don't be afraid to tell a story. And don't think you don't have a story to tell either. Seth shared how everyday stories can be such powerful tools in marketing as well too. And I believe that I had also touched on this during the podcast as well. Keep a notes tab, write it on a piece of paper, just kind of the things that pass by. They aren't just about tales to tell. They're tools to connect and build relationships. When you share those little moments, those everyday stories, you're not just selling a product, you're inviting your audience into a narrative. You're making your brand relatable and genuine. For example, you know how I like examples. Let's take an owner of a bakery that's driving to work and they pass a bus stop with kids and parents waiting on a bus on a chilly morning. This is how I tell the story. Every morning, I drive past the same bus stop on my way to open up my bakery. Now, today, it was especially chilly. Yes, California chilly. So there was a bite in the air to the chill. And I saw these group of kids waiting for their school bus, and they were shivering, and they looked miserable, and not all of them had gloves, and the parents were cold. It made me think of just warmth and comfort, and I wanted to go to that. I want to seek that all the time in cold mornings. That's why I decided to start Warm Welcome, where every cold morning, anyone who comes by on their way to work or school gets a free small coffee or hot chocolate with any purchase. It's my way of spreading a little warmth in the community. Bam, that's the story. And I was just driving past a bus stop. The marketing campaign, Warm Welcome. And now you have your marketing message with it. So next time you think about your marketing strategy, remember those simple stories could be your strongest assets. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Post on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page or the YouTube channel. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversations flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.